inside guy Chuck Bridenstine and the outside guy Ken Calverley.
Good morning and welcome to the Sunday morning edition of Housing Information You Can Trust. Yeah, this is the inside guy, Chuck. Normally Ken starts us out, but in the interest of full disclosure and transparency, Ken isn't even here. Instead, we got Pat Kelly. Let me think. Mechanical technician extraordinaire. Does that work for you, Pat?
No.
No. Pat's still young enough to fight, and I'm too old to fight, but he threatened me that if I put him on the spot, he's going to hurt me, so I got to be careful. But if you've got any questions about mechanical devices in and around the house or your 7-Eleven or your factory or your school system, I encourage you to take advantage of Pat and call today. We're going to keep the phone lines open from 10 to noon. At noon, Ken and I will actually be at Atlas Home Improvement for an hour, an educational hour with regard to their product and services. But meanwhile, it'll be Pat Kelly talking to you about, a lot of things. You and I are like kids in a candy store when we get to talk, aren't we?
We certainly are. Yeah.
I sincerely appreciate you being here and sharing breakfast and the show with me today.
Well, it's fun being here. I enjoy doing this.
But you didn't drive your clown car today, and I was really disappointed when I saw you pull in that huge gas-guzzling GM product. I mean, God.
Did you call it a clown car? Is that what you just called it?
I had to. Pat bought a Bolt, a fully electric car, right?
Yes.
A year ago-ish?
2 years.
Was
two
it 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago. It just in the last year I started driving it, though.
That's what it was. Yeah, because I remember you bought it and then put it in a building and didn't drive it. I remember it used to hoot on you. It's like,
I have to put a mask on to drive it, so I don't want anybody to know I'm driving it.
So, actually, it's a very attractive vehicle, but I had some questions for you immediately. You know, today in terms of, I know that if you're, well, we had some snow on the windshield today when we got up.
Right.
32 degrees. And I thought of you driving, and I thought you were driving that car. And I know if you turn the heater on, that it's going to reduce your range.
Right.
Right?
Right. The Bolt is good for 260 miles. And on the Bolt, they have what they call a gasometer. It's a GOM, and I don't know what it stands for other than gasometer. Okay. And it tells you approximate range that you're good for. So when you plug in, you know, when you unplug, assumably you're going to be at 260. And
so you can go 260 miles,
right,
we think, on this charge.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that you can't go past 260 unless you know how to use one of those new fang-dangled things that I don't care to do. In fact, you
could sit in a Meijer parking lot for 4 hours and –
if you read on it, it says that 85% of the people that own an electric car charge them at home, and I would be one of those 85%. But so what happens is if you're going down the road, this thing has a heat pump because it doesn't have an engine with a radiator. It has a little heat pump like we'd use in the heating industry. And so it's either throwing out cold gases or hot gases depending on what you're calling for. So when you turn on the heat, it's the same as turning on the air conditioner, and you can watch that gasometer drop by 25 miles.
Reducing your range.
Reducing the range by 25 miles. But in the same token, if you turn it off, you can see it step up 25 miles. So it's, it's a nice around town car if you were going to be driving around town, but I certainly would not try to go up north with it or something, because the very best you can do is get a fast charge that'll take you 80% of that range. So whatever 80% is, 210 or whatever it is,
it'll
give you 210, and it takes a half hour. Now, I don't know about you, but if I pull in with that big gas-guzzling GM product that I drive.
Which I love, by the way.
Yeah, and the pump is slow, I pull it out and hang it up and go to the next gas station. I don't have time to sit in a gas station. And especially a half hour to charge it.
Yeah.
So, but it is convenient to pull into my garage, plug it in, pull into either garage and plug it in. I've got plugs in each one. Plug it in and let it charge up. And as you know, I have solar at my house. So
I'm glad you said it, because I was going to remind you.
I somewhat have free energy, kind of.
How many kW do you have?
20 kW. That's as much as you can have.
Or K, I'm sorry.
And 20 kW is as much as you can have.
That's as much as you can have?
Residentially.
Yes. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. You have a limit on it. Now, I think they've eased up on it and have done something different. But, Chuck, I'm out of that industry now, so I can't talk fluently.
And I'm not being funny. You pull into a heated garage.
Yep.
And you plug in.
Yeah.
You're an electrician.
Yeah.
For you, that was all easy to do. You set up those stations, I know, at your house. So you're a bit of an anomaly. I see these advertisements all the time for these electric cars, and people are in their driveway with this cord, and I'm going, okay, that cord had to go back into the garage and be connected to something inside. And what happens to that in the wintertime when you park in your driveway and plug in January and that cord is stiff, and are you going to leave it there for the snowplow to hit? I mean, I just think about all that stuff.
I don't think about it any other way than pulling into your garage.
Sure.
Even if it's cold, it should be fine. I don't think I really have a problem with any of that. My problem is just having to pre-plan my trips because – I've never had to
spend
that
half hour here and there.
Yeah, well, I mean, no
charging.
Matter, yeah, and then you got to be in an area that there's a charging station, a fast charge station.
Yeah.
Then you have to have an app on your phone to be able to use that charger, and it's just a. You
know, does cold or hot affect range if it's really cold?
It doesn't seem to, but again, I've only driven it for the year, so gotcha. I'm not even sure that I. You know, like I had to look and make sure I was front wheel drive because I don't know because I've never driven it.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah. Is it front wheel versus four or all?
Yeah.
Okay.
Front wheel drive. So it's a nice vehicle. It's just that electric will never, ever make it. It can't be done. It can't happen. The largest auto manufacturer in the world is Toyota, and they do not even have one in the plans.
Really? Now, I would have thought Toyota had electric cars.
Nope. Nothing there.
Huh. Interesting. Well, if you've got questions, concerns about your house and its electrical capability, you got Pat Kelly here, 888-654-GUYS. Meanwhile, speaking of electricians, we've got a great one that we've had wonderful success with as a team partner. He takes good care of our listeners, and, of course, you know them as Bratcher Electric.
You have housing questions? The Inside Outside guys on WJR have the answers. Here are Ken and Chuck.
Welcome back, everybody. Appreciate you being with us. It's not Ken and Chuck today. Actually, Ken just sent me a picture of a trophy that he missed.
Beautiful.
Pat Kelly, yeah, a gorgeous deer. Ken's down in Hocking Hills, Ohio. If you happen to drive by and see a guy in an orange vest carrying a gun, it might be him. Say hi. But anyway, the show's going to be open to you, our callers, at 888-654-4897. That's guys. Pat showed me pictures of deer.
Steve Holcomb's.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. Opening day is Tuesday, right, I think, in Michigan?
For rifle, but opening day for that was taken with a bow. That was November 1st.
Okay, I knew it was a little while ago, but I'm so bad on those dates. Anyway, questions, concerns, or comments on anything housing, of course, we're available to you today. But we also want to, I guess, focus on Pat's expertise, which is pretty much mechanical systems in a house. Is that a fair statement?
No.
Notwithstanding plumbing. Oh, you lie. You're too humble. I can say you lie because he's across from me far enough away that he can't hit me or anything.
No, you can... I wouldn't think I'm an expert at it, but I do know a little bit about that heating and cooling and electrical.
Man, I've known a lot of people, and I'm not trying to blow wind up your blue jeans there, but you are an expert by my definition. I don't know who else I would call to get as well-rounded. The neat thing is you worked for Canton Schools for 27 years, you told me, and you dealt with just about every system they had mechanically while you were there, right?
Yes.
I mean, chillers. You said you were in charge. It was
chillers and boilers and
the largest chiller
in Wayne County. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's I was going to say that's huge, but that's impressive because you had to learn how that thing worked, how it operated, how to maintain it. Correct.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And that's just one aspect, the boilers. That's a whole other thing. Did the system use steam heat at the time? Is that
Well, we used hot water, but we had steam throughout the district. But in the places I was stationed at, were primarily hot water. But, yeah, I have a steam license.
So that system was primarily pumping hot water through pipes to produce the heat in the buildings?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Which people, it'd be fun to do a whole show just on stuff like that because that's fascinating. It really is. I mean, you've got these huge boilers sitting in a building, right? And then you're pumping hot water generated by those boilers to other buildings to heat them?
Yeah. Well, in one particular instance.
Depends on the facility,
yeah,
obviously.
I was at a facility where they had three gigantic boilers, 220 million BTU apiece.
220 million BTU apiece.
And
what's a furnace in an average house?
80,000 BTUs.
Yeah.
So they're just huge and threw huge flames out. But they put them in because at the time energy was cheap, and they planned on sending energy to another building because I was at a park.
Sure.
And then I mean, it was expensive, so they were going to do it that way. And then all of a sudden the price went crazy down.
What was your fuel at that time?
Nat gas.
Natural gas?
Yeah. Okay. But it was, when they built it, it was really expensive, and then it got real cheap, so they put boilers in the other schools. So here I am sitting in one high school that had three of those big boilers in it, and it couldn't even really use one. So over the years, through bonds and stuff, I finally got them to downsize and put two small boilers, and it's never needed three anyways because you were always laying one of them up.
And you certainly didn't need three of that size.
No, you really, one that size was too much. So
wow.
I think we ended up, and don't quote me on this, but I think we ended up with 2 1 million BTU boilers in that building, and we took out three 220, you know, whatever it was.
So what's the premise of a chiller?
What does a chiller
water. Do?
Just
How's
chills
it work?
Water. You take water going through that same boiler loop that you got, and you're running cold water through that loop. And so a chiller has cold gases that cools down that
like a refrigerator, like a giant refrigerator.
Just like a giant. And that's why they call it a chiller. It's just like a giant refrigerator. Cools down the water. Then the water, you pull the heat out of the water, and you take it outside into a cooling tower. And you run it across a cooling tower, and it cools that water down. That's
side got
of the
water, that uses water.
Yeah, that's not the water that goes through the lines.
To extract the heat.
Yeah. So
dissipate it.
Yep. And so anyways, yeah, the water just runs through the same line as a boiler, and you got a chiller that with refrigerant. Back then I used to use a refrigerant called R11, which is kind of unheard of today.
Yeah.
And it would cool the water down and send it through the pipes. And then you have blowers blowing across coils that into a room and have air conditioning.
Okay. How about electrical work? You're a master electrician.
No.
You never got that designation?
No, I never did. That was John.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but I am an electrical contractor, and you can do that without having the master's.
So anything residential, electrically, high voltage, low voltage?
Commercial as well.
Commercial.
Yeah, we do all of it. We did do all of it. I don't do any of it anymore. So I'm kind of retired.
So generators. Any experience with generators?
No, none.
You were one of the first people that brought to us the notion that eventually every house would have a generator.
It will.
And I don't doubt that. We've seen that just go crazy over the last 15 years ish.
Actually, the last 2 years have just been phenomenal.
Has it?
It's just been
more
phenomenal.
So than any.
And we spoke a little bit at breakfast, but I want to bring this up to the audience as well. Is that back in the early 2000s? I remember I had a big generator at my house, and I was doing a remortgage, and I asked him, you know, does it make a difference? Because that's a $20,000 uptick. And it didn't make a difference because you have to have three of the same kind of homes in the same kind of area and they all had to have generators. Now there's so many of them put in now that a generator brings 3 to 5% more value to your home. So if you got a $200,000 home, that could be quite about a $400,000-$500,000 home. 5% goes towards
that's
the
a lot
generator
of money.
Now. Yep, and then it says that if you were getting ready to sell a house, if you put in a generator, you'll get 150% back on return. So in other words, if you have a You know, let's say you spend $10,000, you'll get $15,000 back when you sell the house.
We always talk about that in terms of cost to value. We've written articles on that concept. A front door returns that kind of value typically, statistically throughout the nation. But it's interesting to think that generators have now evolved. That's really huge.
Well, our grid is so unpredictable now. I mean, and it's so worn out. It was built in 1959, so worn out. Now our government wants to put charging stations in all over for these cars. And just think about just the cars are out there right now, what that's doing to our grid. And then imagine what it's going to do when he starts putting in these charging stations. This is just unbelievable.
When we come back from break, I'm going to ask you to reiterate an analogy you gave me with gas stations and whatnot.
Very good.
You got time to think about it.
Yeah, okay.
He gave me that angry look. No, I'm kidding. We often brag about our team partners and what great citizens they are and all the good work they do beyond what they do for you on a daily basis. And one of those good citizens is Victor's Roofing, soon to be Victor's Home Solutions. They give away one roof for every 100 they sell. This next segment of the Inside Outside Guy is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions.
Here for you today and every day. This is the Inside Outside Guys on WJR. Here are Chuck and Ken.
Welcome back, everybody. Appreciate you being with us. Ken's not here. He's out. He's down south. I don't know if I should disclose this, but if you're listening in Ohio, you've got a Michigander down there shooting your trophy deer. That'd be Ken. And another friend of mine in the show and a good neighbor, Ted Alessi, is heading up north right now to get ready for opening day. I won't be leaving until tomorrow. And you're not going to bother. You're surrounded by trophy deer where you are down by Jonesville.
I don't have the moxie for it. I just don't. I can't do it anymore.
Well, you like prime rib more.
Yeah. I don't like venison. Yeah. Exactly. I really like to watch them. They're a hoot to watch. You know.
I know you've never invited me down to hunt, so I figure you didn't want any of them to die. Hey, we were talking about your expertise, and I do believe you're an expert. I know you don't feel you are, and I respect that. You and I are kindred spirits in that we're always trying to learn more about this field, right?
Right.
It's like you can be broad and shallow, or you can be narrow and deep, or you can be like you and I that are just, it's our life science. We're trying to discover what's out there every day, and it's fun.
Yes.
It's your passion. So chillers, boilers, generators, electrical systems, both residential and commercial, and yet you're not an expert. Okay, let's keep going. You were around as I was.
Politics.
No. When the whole high efficiency thing came in.
Yep.
We had owners we were building houses for that demanded those new high efficient furnaces, and we had a lot of problems with them early on. Electrical problems, there were override systems, you know, that would turn them on. I used to feel comfortable in an old furnace going in and fixing them, believe it or not. I don't know if you and I have ever talked about this. As soon as the high-efficiency units came out and I looked inside one of those doors at all the wires and the board, and I said, nope, I'm done.
That's it. It's really not it's not that much different, a little bit different. You used to have an old fan switch that was activated by metal. You know, bimetal fan switch that would turn the fan on at 125 and go off. One of the differences is now is the fan is on a timed relay where it comes on 7 seconds after the gas fires, regardless of what the heat temperature is. So
it starts moving air before the air is arguably warm enough.
Oh, 100%, but that's how the efficiency went up. And one of the things that I would tell you about high efficiency is they used to call 80% high efficiency.
Yeah, I remember that.
And now you can't buy one that's less than 80%. 80 is the smallest you can buy.
You can still buy 80.
Yep. Yeah. But there's really no difference. A lot of people say, well, there's big difference between an 80 and a 90. Really, there isn't, other than it's got a secondary heat exchanger on a 90% furnace. Flame starts to combust the cooler it gets. So as it gets cooler, The secondary heat exchanger on a 90% is down at the very bottom, and it looks like a little radiator, and it really is. And it will literally condensate right there, and that's why a 90% has to have a drain going to a floor.
So it's extracting so much heat from that air that its ability to carry moisture disappears, and that moisture condenses and appears in the unit.
That's pretty good explanation, yeah.
Yeah, Pat told me that this morning at breakfast.
Well,
I just rehashed.
Here's another thing. With an 80% furnace, you got to line the chimneys nowadays. And you have to say, well, why? You know, I pulled out an old 70. And well, the
worked just fine for 30 years.
The flue gases were so much hotter going up there, it would stay until it got to the top of the chimney and hit the cold air. And then you'd see people thought it was smoke. It's condensate.
Yeah, and all the birds surrounded there because they were toasting marshmallows and
now what happens is with an 80% furnace, it'll condensate halfway up the chimney, and that's why Ken had so many chimneys rotting on him, is because the condensate would the flue gases got colder going up, and it would start condensating.
They weren't fully exhausting,
right?
Yeah, and they were condensing inside the chimney.
Yep,
and that also contains acids,
sulfuric acid, byproduct of combustion is sulfuric acid. Yeah.
Which obviously is not something anybody wants to inhale or put into their system, but it literally was deteriorating, eating these chimneys from the inside out. Yeah. So when we went to the PVC powered vent systems, you're good with that? You think that makes sense?
It's the same as an 80. Yeah. Only it's got a secondary heat exchanger. And the only reason you put PVC out the wall, a lot of people think it's easier. It's not. It really is not easier to put PVC out the
wall. Some houses, it's brutal to even try to find a route for that.
Right. But the reason you use PVC is because that furnace is a condensating furnace. It's condensating from the time it leaves the chimney, so it doesn't wait until it gets outside to condensate. The pipes you actually have to pitch back to the furnace, and then they go out to drain and down a drain in your floor or a condensate pump or whatever.
So can those condensate lines ever plug up?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why you have service techs.
What's the result? Well, think about this. We'll take a call here. Actually, this is for you.
Uh-oh.
Rob from Brownstown.
He lied to you, Rob.
Is Rob there with us? Rob?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Good. You got Pat Kelly here. Go ahead and address your question with him.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Over the summer, I had called, I was constantly running the blower because I was told that it's pretty good for the airflow in the house. But we noticed about a $50 increase in our monthly bill from doing that.
Yep.
The furnace is 80%er. It's probably about 27 years old. Okay. Any steps I could do to cut the cost of that?
Yeah, there really is, and I'm not sure that you're going to like my answer, but I'm going to tell you just because I just do that. 27 years, you've got more than a life expectancy out of that. Buy a new one and buy 80. Don't buy 90.
Replace an 80 with an 80.
Yeah, and the reason I tell you 80, Rob, is all of the new furnaces starting, I want to say 2019, just so you know, Rob, I retired 3 years ago, so I don't really part of my age thing is I forget stuff. But I think it was 2019 is when they came out with the code that all motors have to be ECM motors now. And and your motor's a PCS motor, so let me explain to you the difference. You said $50 a month, and that's about – it can be anywhere between $20 and $50 to run an old PSC motor.
So he was running that motor to circulate air, and he was paying an extra $50 a month. I just want the other listeners to know what's going on.
Perfect. And so today with the ECM motor, which is a different kind of motor, it's actually a technical thing would say it's a three-phase AC motor running on DC current. So in other words, that fan will cost you now about $5 a month, $5 to $7 a month. And you're going to get all the benefits you're getting right now of keeping that air circulating. It does so much for you, Rob. I can't say, it takes all the stratification out of the air. You humidify better with it. It certainly feels better in the summertime, especially if you got a two-story.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of advantages. But But get a new furnace. You're ready for it anyways, and it doesn't matter. I have some favorites. I'm a huge fan of American made, and I would tell you Amana and Luxair and Rudd. Some of those are. I do your due diligence if you're like me and you like American made, or I can explain it to you. But if you just do your due diligence, get any one of those products. Get most of them now have a 10-year parts warranty, but you can get 10 years parts and labor. You're set free. You get one of those, you're set free, and you'll save energy.
American made, is that the name of the company or?
No. I'm sorry. No, I'm an American kind of guy, so I wished everybody bought American. So there's a company, Johnson Control, out of Kansas, who makes Luxair. Mm-hmm.
A
lot of furnaces are
Johnson
different.
Johnson Control is big.
Yeah. Well, they're a Fortune 500 company. Yeah. But so is Amana. Amana's got a nice product. I would tell you that the Luxair is a little quieter. That's just my opinion. Luxair is a nice furnace. So you go with that, you won't be sorry.
Okay. So I don't really need to go anything above 80% then, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would go 80. You can do 90 if you want to save a little bit. Let me explain that real quick. So here's the difference between 80 and 90. You can go 96% or 97%, okay? And so you're going to pay $1,000 more just for the venting. You're going to pay $1,000 more. And your return on that, 16% more. So if you got 80% versus 90%, it's 16% more. Your average heat bill in the state of Michigan is between $600 and $800. So you're going to save 16. So everything we do, we look at the ROI, return on investment. It's just not there to go to the 90. You're better off doing the 80. You can get it cheaper, and you can get your money back.
The front-end money you're going to put out to go up that extra 10% efficiency will not pay you back in a time.
In 10 years. Yeah. It's not going to do it. Yeah. So.
Does
that answer your question?
Yeah, it sure does. It's going to work getting more efficiently the air to the second floor with these newer ECM motors, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It does work. There's just some poor design to second floor. You know, trying to get air up to the second floor. Today we use 7-inch instead of 6-inch, and a lot of times they use 5-inch years ago to get up to the second floor. So but you can, yeah, it'll push more air up to the second floor.
I really appreciate it. Thanks.
No problem, Rob. Have a good day.
God bless you, Rob. Thanks for your call. Great questions. Hey, we want to remind everybody that we've got a company. If you've got some ugly concrete, old concrete, sidewalks, driveway, garage floor, basement floor, or maybe you own an industrial facility with concrete floors that need to be beautified and extended, Motor City Floors and Coatings is the answer to all of those issues.
Find professional contractors you can trust at InsideOutsideGuys.com. Now, once again, here are Ken Calverley and Chuck Bridenstine.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to remind you, it's Chuck Bridenstine and Pat Kelly. And you've come to know Pat over the years that Ken and I have been on the radio. And, Pat, I'm sorry, I'm going to keep calling you an expert, not for my benefit, but my belief in these systems. I loved listening, just sitting back and listening to you talk to Rob a minute ago. Anybody got any questions like Rob? 888-654-4897. Direct them to Pat. Pat bought donuts so I can sit and have a donut while Pat's talking. God bless you. I'm going to gain about 12 pounds during this broadcast. And a reminder that Ken and I will be at Atlas Home Improvement from 12 to 1 today. Going to be a good show with Derry and Bobby. We invite you to join us. Pat, you suggested that Rob replace a 27-year-old furnace, 80% efficiency, mm-hmm. with another 80% efficiency unit. And you're the guy that has the clown car. And solar.
Did you just call that a clown car?
I love you, man. You've got the solar panels out at the house. You've got geotherm. You've got... If the world ever goes to heck in a handbasket, Chuck's going to be at your front door within about 2.5 hours with my family. But anyway, replace 80 with 80. Explain that to people a little more. You talked about
it's just
return.
It's just a return on investment. So if you go with a 96% furnace, you're going to pay at least $1,000 more, at least. So let's just say that you pay $3,000 for one and $4,000 for the other one, okay?
Yep.
So you got $1,000 more into the 96%. Well,
can I back you up for just a second there?
Yes, sir.
So the unit itself is going to cost more, right?
Right.
And you said you have to upgrade your chimney.
No. Well, in some cases, yeah, that too.
Yeah.
But you're, let's just go with a minimum of $1,000.
No, I know. I just wanted to make sure people knew where extra money might come into play here.
Well, some of it's PVC piping. Some of it's the labor putting in PVC piping. That's okay. Not easy.
Gotcha.
And then you have to blank off the chimney or run a 4-inch chimney liner up there for your hot water heater. There's all sorts of things, but you're going to run a minimum of $1,000 more for a 96 versus an 80.
Yeah.
So my point to that, and it took me a while, to be honest with you. I mean, I didn't come – I was a
person. I worked real hard trying to convert you over the
years. Yeah, you did. Until they came out with the new code for the ECM motors, and once they made everybody use ECMs now, I went, hey, wait a minute. What are we doing here? Because I always look at it return on investment. If you're going to give me money, how long is it going to take to get it back? That's what I want to know.
So let me ask you another qualifying question as we move forward with this discussion. Every new furnace made today will have at least an ECM motor in it.
No doubt, everything.
Okay.
You can't buy one without an ECM motor.
Okay.
2019, I believe it was, that he changed that. So anyways, you've got $1,000 you got to make up somehow between the 80 and a 90 before you start making money.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not really sure of the number, but you've got $1,000 more and you've got a $600 yearly heating bill. So you're going to save 16.
Yearly.
Yeah, you might have 800.
68, yeah.
Yeah, let's say you have 1,000. Let's just say you have 1,000. That means you're going to save $160 a year.
16% of $1,000 annual heating.
$160. How long is it going to take you to pay that extra 1,000 off? But that's not. It's actually more like a 12 or 13 year payback.
Yeah.
And by that time, you're ready for a new furnace. I mean,
statistically,
Michigan tells you that you need a new furnace every 15 years.
Yeah.
That's why I was telling Rob he's got 27 years.
I know. He's
good
almost
for him.
Doubled that. God bless him.
Yeah.
We just replaced a 22-year-old one up north this summer, and I took your advice, our shared thinking, and just replaced it with the same efficiency that we'd started with.
Yeah. And it's the minimum efficiency you can get now. But the payback, I mean, it just makes all the sense in the world.
I like that. The ECM motors, you also explained that to Rob, but if most of our listeners are like me, they got to hear it a couple times. It's actually wired as a standard voltage motor, right?
But, yes.
Go ahead.
No, it is. It's actually a three-phase AC motor. In other words, it's a commercial three-phase motor running on DC current. So,
which sounds weird.
It does sound weird.
It does.
It's called an electronically communicated motor.
Yeah.
And I don't remember all the specs on it, but I can tell you for sure it doesn't have a capacitor on it. So here's what a capacitor does. It saves energy and boots the start of a motor. And you have it on all 110 motors. So on a standard PSC motor, what would happen is your fan is either on or off, period. There's no in between.
So it's like a gas pedal in a car. You're either floored.
Yep, or you're not.
Or you're not going
with
at all.
With an ECM motor, it kind of ramps up, and then it starts ramping back down to keep your thermostat satisfied. But more importantly, it's running on DC current, so it makes it so much cheaper to run.
Yeah. So you also explained to Rob then on the cusp of that description that moving that air benefits you and the house a lot.
Oh, well, yeah. It takes care of the stratification in your house. So
what do you mean when you say stratification? What the
heck? Well, hot spots, cold spots. You know, there's areas in your house that don't get proper humidity. If you keep that fan running, the fan's the key to everything. Now, I used to be a huge fan of variable speed. You've heard me say it.
I was going to ask you about that as well.
Well, it's a great product even still today if you can afford it, but it's so expensive to put them in.
That's a variable speed motor in the furnace.
That's right. And here's what that does. That ramps up and down on call for heating and cooling. So it goes down to 250 CFM, so you can't hear it. You have to put
it's barely running, but it is pushing air through the ducts.
Takes care of all the stratification out of the house, everything, second floor, everything. So, and the only way you know it's running, you've got to put a Kleenex over the register and you see it blow up. You can't hear it. The difference on that and 80 is that you'll hear that motor on the 80 running. It runs at a little higher static, so you can hear that running. But if you can, I use one at my house. I love it. So I keep mine going all the time.
So the variable speed, you said you don't need that?
No, not anymore. Now that because now they're both ECMs. One of the few government laws that I like. I can't.
Well, I never
it.
Thought you'd put all those words together in the same sentence.
I know. I mean,
government law that I like.
My tongue got messed up trying to say that.
You had trouble spitting that out.
Yeah. No, it's just that, you know, when they came out with the SEER rating for air conditioning, season energy efficiency rating, I mean, I wish they would have said miles per gallon, right?
Good for you.
But when they went to 13 SEER as a minimum, like, and then they start changing refrigerants, are you kidding me? You know, it was just to make money. That's all it was about. Now they're talking about doing 15 SEER. Yeah, you can save more money.
Requiring it as a minimum in the energy code, you mean?
Yes. Well, you can do 20. You can do up to 20. Yeah. And it's a great product. I love it.
You the save higher the energy. Number, the higher the efficiency.
And the higher the cost.
Oh, yeah.
So the front end cost might be twice as much as your 13 SEER.
Man, we got to stop again. We talked through another segment, Patrick. Hey, I want you to stick around after the top of the hour. Pat Kelly and I will be continuing our discussion about mechanical systems in and around houses and buildings. We invite your calls at that point in time, 888-654-GUYS. And want to remind you that once the rains start coming and your basement or crawl space starts getting wet and leaking, wherever you are in this signal range, we've got a solution for you, and it is Foundation Systems of Michigan.
It's the Inside Outside Guys on News Talk 760 WJR with housing information you can trust. Now here's the Inside Guy, Chuck Bridenstine, and the Outside Guy, Ken Calverley.
888-654-GUYS. It's Inside Guy Chuck and Inside Guy Pat Kelly. Actually, you got a question about anything inside or out, we can handle it for you here. We'd love to hear from you today. We've got a couple callers on the line right now that have questions for Pat, so I get to eat another Long John. Dan from Brooklyn, Pat, wants to chat with you about his 17-year-old furnace, which is already he's already made his money on that. Dan, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, Dan, this is Pat Kelly. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm well. And, hey, I love Brooklyn. I live out that way. I'm in Jerome, so Brooklyn's a nice little town.
Pat's got the estate that you drive by and go, geez, how do people get that much money?
Yeah, right. What can I do for you today, Dan?
Well, it's a kind of a two-part question or problem or whatever.
Okay.
The new house was built a little over 17 years ago, and it's got a condensing furnace in it, and it runs just fine, except from the day it was built, on occasion, it cycles in 5 to 15 seconds instead of going through a full, minute and a half cycle. So the question is, did I just have somebody come out and take a look at it? And I've had several people come out and look at it for the cycling problem. And, of course, it doesn't do that when the gentleman is here. But I just heard you guys saying that at 17 years, I'm getting near the end of life on this thing. And
well,
it is
actually,
a condensing furnace.
Yeah, thank you for telling me that. That's nice to know. There's a couple things that can be going on with that, but what we used to offer in my old business is what we called a clean-in check, or some people call it a tune-up, some people call it a safety check. But you find yourself a great company out there, somebody that you like, and do your due diligence because there's a lot of them out there. But you want a good, honest company, and I can tell you a couple of things that I would look for in a short cycle. First and foremost is probably the thermostat. But if it's not doing it all the time, then likely it's not the thermostat. But you have what you call a flame sensor that sits inside of the flame. It's just a straight bar, Dan. It's a little wire bar, and it's got a wire going to it. So you'll see a, electrical wire going to it. And what it does is it reads that flame, and that's the most common one. So when you take that, you're going to take that cover apart. You've got a condensating, so you've got a sealed unit, and get into where the flame's at. Okay, make sure the furnace is off when you're doing that. And get to that little bar. It's called a flame sensor. Now, what that does is it lays over top of the pilot. So when the pilot starts, it reads that there's a pilot light there and that it started. And then it'll allow the gas valve to open. If, for whatever reason, at any time it doesn't read the flame, it'll close that gas valve down and it short cycles. Now, that's a real common, especially if it's near laundry. So if you have laundry, your dryer.
No, it's in the basement. There's no laundry. Okay. I need to tell you two other things, I guess, about it.
Okay.
Number one, it's an electronic ignition.
Yep.
And number two, it short cycles on the air conditioning as well.
Then thermostat, 100%. Go to thermostat.
Okay.
Go down to Home Depot. Go down to Home Depot. Buy yourself a, when I say Home Depot, go any big box store. Buy yourself a digital thermostat. Is your thermostat digital, or is it a round Honeywell thermostat?
No, it's a digital Honeywell that has all the bells and whistles so that you can do the ups and downs of the you know, by the
program.
Time of day.
Just so you know, Dan, almost all of them do that now. When you the fancy thermostats today, you can dial up from your phone. But if you just go down and buy a simple thermostat, it costs you under $30. Change that out, and you should be just fine with it. I can't see any reason why that wouldn't work for you. You call back if you have any problems at all. Get a hold of the Inside Outside guys. Go to their website or whatever. See if you can get me to come over there. Look, I'm not afraid to drive over there. Out when you're out in the country, driving 25 miles is nothing, you know. So.
You guys could meet at Oaks Tavern and talk about it.
Yeah, we
can do that.
Well, I'm purchasing the Oaks Tavern. That's what he's talking about. So.
But as far as the 17-year-old furnace that's still functioning, just have it checked out.
Well, you know what? Here's what I would say about that. Michigan or ACCU would tell you 15 years is a lifespan. Here's what I would say. If you can get somebody
that's
to do
an average,
an honest.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's an average. And I'm not sure I totally agree with that. But you know, because that can be a pretty kind of a semi-major purchase. You're probably looking at $4,000 to $4,500 to replace that furnace. If you can get somebody to check it out and do a safety check on it for $79 or $89, and what a safety check does is tells you if there's any CO or CO2 leaking. If it's leaking, it's time to get rid of it. Don't replace anything on it. Get rid of the furnace. If there's nothing leaking on it, give it another year or two and start putting money away for the new furnace. Start planning on it.
Sounds like a good plan, yeah.
All right, Dan. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You have a great day.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. How about you want to talk to a guy from Northeast Ohio?
Yeah, absolutely.
When we come back from break, if you're on the phone, please hang on. We got a bunch of callers want to talk to Pat Kelly. We'll be right back, but we want to remind somebody of a good friend. Pat and I were just talking about Steve Dickinson, that is a co-owner of a great company, Amnesty Air Duct Cleaning and Insulation. Good company, right?
Absolutely.
The next segment of this show is sponsored very happily by Amnesty Air Duct Cleaning and Insulation.
You have housing questions? The Inside Outside guys on WJR have the answers. Here are Ken and Chuck.
Welcome back, everybody. Chuck and Pat Kelly, and we've got a lot of people on the phone that want to talk to Pat, so let's go right back to the phones here. We've got a gentleman from Northeast Ohio, Tim, that wants to talk about dryer vent booster fans. Tim, you with us?
I am.
You got Pat Kelly here.
I'm not you're probably the one I want to talk to. Good morning. I'm moving a dryer from an outside wall to an inside wall, and it's going to add a lot of length and two more elbows to the system. So I guess I'm over the 35 feet, so I need to put a booster pump in there or a blower.
Yeah.
And
actually,
I was wondering where the... Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say in the state of Michigan, we're at 23 feet. I don't know about Ohio. So 23 feet's our length. So
I'm just going off the things that I see on the internet. That's why I'm calling you, because I don't know what the heck I'm doing. But they say on the internet.
I respect that.
It's like 35 feet, I guess. But even 25, it puts me over. So I need a booster fan. And I was wondering where the best placement would be, because I guess you want to match the fan up with the output of the dryer, which would be like 160 CFM.
Yes. I can tell you that I only had that experience once, because we tried to do everything we could to vent it out. And all I researched it, and I can tell you that I put it within like 2 feet from the dryer. But I bought they've got it, and I don't remember the name, so please forgive me. It was 10 years ago, but they have these ones out that do not collect lint. And that's the biggest killer on an induced fan, is that if you just try to use like a regular induced duct fan, they'll collect lint. But they have them specifically for dryers that don't collect lint. I'm not experienced with it at all. I only did it one time where we had to go over. But I do remember, you asked a question about how close you put it. I do remember, for whatever reason, I was within 2 feet or so of the dryer. So we went down through a floor, into a basement and out, and I went down through the floor, put an induced motor, and helped blow it out. That's how ours went.
Well, the things that I've seen so far, they say to put them actually closer to the vent for going outside. But it seems to me like when you get it that far away, it's going to take the 160 CFM coming from the dryer, and it's going to end up being like a suction fan instead of a blowing fan. And I don't know whether that makes a difference or not.
Yeah, but, I feel terrible about it, Tim, because I just don't remember. All I remember is where that fan was. And again, it was within 2 feet. So apparently the instructions told me to do that, or I wouldn't have done it. And so I'm not an expert at that at all. I only did it the one time. So I would just say, you're on the right path by Googling it. Find out which one's the best fan and where to put it.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Sorry, Tim. I'm sorry I couldn't be more help. Have a good day.
Let me throw something additional out to that. You and I were talking about Steve Dickinson, Amnesty Air Duct Cleaning. If you don't have the right booster fan or properly installed, they actually have crews that go out and do duct cleaning and rerouting in houses for dryers.
Mm.
And he has told us 100 stories of people that didn't even know that they had a fan in there that was totally blocked off because it collected lint, like you said.
Right.
If you put the wrong one in there. So it can be a very severe issue. I would say to Tim, if you do this project, get somebody like an Amnesty and have them do an annual check. Pay them $150 and have them once a year come in and make sure that line is perfectly
clean. No, it's a good idea to always have your duct clean, your vent duct from the front. That causes more fires than anything.
It does.
It's the duct vent. You have to clean that.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. Okay, let's stick with the phone, Pat, if you're okay with that.
I'm fine.
I think. Mark from Dearborn Heights is our next caller. Mark, are you with us?
Yes. Hi. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Mark.
Fast, two quick questions. Hey, good morning. Two fast questions for you regarding the ECM blowers. I have a new furnace. So what does that do to the blower life span on the furnace? And also, do you need to run that all the time, or can you do like 15-minute per hour, or what's the best on
that? Well, you can do it 15 minutes on the hour if you wanted to. However, it's best to run it all the time. And what's it do for the lifespan? It extends it. The start stopping of a motor is what causes the motor to go bad. If you turn it on and leave it run, you're fine. So just put it in a hand position. Here's the only thing I would say to you about the new furnace and doing that is that you got to be able to stand that fan noise. To me, it's like a whitewash. Yeah. It just goes away. So if
we
if,
get complaints from listeners on that.
Yeah. But if you and it depends on your furnace, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
location,
if you,
the house, sound transmission.
Yep. Yeah. So and really just the kind of furnace. So but if you can stand that fan running and you got to make sure it's on the right speed. So a lot of people put in a furnace and a lot of contractors will come out and put in a furnace. And let's say it's a 2-ton and they bought a 4-ton blower system. And they didn't adjust the blower system down to a 2-ton. Now you got 4 tons trying to push through there, and it makes a lot of noise. So you just want to make sure that your blower is on the right speed. Turn it on, let it fly, and there's no reason why that motor shouldn't last you 10 to 15 years without a problem.
Okay, okay? Great, fantastic. Hey,
all right, Mark. Good
question.
Luck with
about
that.
A second.
Yes, sir. Okay. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Hey, so I'm thinking I've got so when it exhausts out the PVC pipe, it looks like the water wants to run back down the inside on the piece. The condensation accumulates on top, drips down, and then it looks like it's trying to run back down the inside of the drain pipe. Is that an issue?
No, that's exactly what it's supposed to do. When you take that PVC pipe outside, remember that it's blowing out water right now as it's coming out because it already took all the moisture took all the heat out of the pipe, so it's blowing out moisture. So what it does is it's supposed to pitch back, and then it rolls down into the furnace and into a drain and into the drain of the floor or into a condensate pump or whatever. But it's working exactly the way it's supposed to.
Okay, great. Super.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Very
appreciate
good. Have a good day, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yes,
great questions. I love it. Let's try to squeeze another one in, Pat, real quick here.
Yes, sir.
How about Bruce from Sterling Heights? Advice on UV lights for furnace.
Oh.
Bruce, you with us?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Bruce.
Is that a good idea? Now, I'm running an 80-plus with a 6-inch Space Guard filter for years, and I'm getting ready to do a replacement in a couple of years. And they're saying UV is the way to go.
Bruce, that's 100%. They have a new electronic, and I can't think of the name of it. I apologize, but they look. April Air used to make one called the April Air 5000, but it didn't have the UV in it. It was just electronic air cleaner, 5-inch. It was a beautiful thing. They make a new one out there that has UV in it, and UV takes care of microbial pests, which are primarily smells in your house. So if you have wet dog smell or smoke smell, it'll take that away for you. But UV is the way to go.
Does that help you, Bruce?
No. Yeah, I actually run a thermostat that does the time cycle on my old 80 plus, and all it's done is made me change the filter a little more often, but my house is gone.
We appreciate you being a part of the show, Bruce. Thank you so much for your call. God bless you. Stay well. Hey, if you're looking for not only a good window, but a tremendous warranty, great people, and an installation that you know is done well and properly, then you've got to consider Clarkston Window and Door.
Here for you today and every day. This is the Inside Outside Guys on WJR. Here are Chuck and Ken.
Welcome back, everybody. We're going to stay with the phones because we've got a lot of callers. It's Chuck and Pat Kelly, our expert on mechanical systems in homes. Sorry, Pat, have to keep doing that to you. Let's talk to Glenn from South Lyon. Are you still with us, Glenn?
I am. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Glenn.
How can we help you?
We have hot water heat in our small two-level condo, and we also have central air conditioning, so we have a central fan. So the way the thermostat is currently set up now is we're switching to the cold weather. When the heat comes on, the fan comes on. And, you know, on the one hand, it strikes me that it could be a benefit in moving the air around in here and sort of equalizing temperatures throughout. But then there's also the cost of having the fan run. And I just wondered if Pat might have an opinion as to, you know, sort of the ROI question.
Yeah, that's funny you should say that, but that is true. The The best time, obviously, to turn on a fan and let it run all the time is in the heat of the summer, not so much the cold of the winter. So my answer would be leave it on the automatic position and let it come on as necessary, because it's going to, if you've got an older fan, it's going to cost you money. You have to have a fan that's 2019 or earlier that were ECM motors. So if you've got something that's older than that, Glenn, I would highly recommend you just leave it in the automatic position and let it come on as needed.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you so much.
Okay.
A lot of help.
You're welcome, Glenn.
Thanks
for
holding, Glenn. We appreciate that. Let's go to Mike. God bless you. Is Mike from Ann Arbor still with us?
Yes, he is.
Here's Pat Kelly.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Pat. My question for you is about a product called WellConnect that is an add-on to a furnace, and it's supposed to lower your cost by like 80%. Have you any thoughts on that?
I have none. What does WellConnect do for you, Mike? I have no idea what it is.
Oh, okay. Basically, it's invented by a fellow at U of M, an engineer, and it uses your well water, and it's like a refrigeration unit.
Geotherm, yeah.
Yeah, very similar to geotherm, except it uses your well water.
Yep.
But if you've never heard of it, then...
Well, I haven't heard of that specific item. However, I happen to have geotherm, so I know what you're talking about. If you're using well water, you know, it's typically comes into the house at 58 degrees, and that's heating or cooling. And what I would tell you, Mike, what I know about that from living with, I have a geotherm that I've lived in for, I put it in 5 years ago, but then I retired and moved out to the farm. So now I'm in a retirement place. So I live there all year so I can watch what's going on with it, energy efficiency and stuff. So with that WellConnect, you'll find, and I'm sure you already have, that air conditioning is probably next to nothing. Your 58 degrees will cool your house without a problem.
So would you bring water from the well and tie it into a manifold in the duct system?
Yeah, it's exactly. Your A coil, instead of having an A coil, you'd have a water coil.
Yep.
And it's going to have 58-degree water running through a coil.
You blow air across that coil.
You're picking up 58-degree air, and it costs you next to nothing other than the cost of the fan running.
What do you do with that water? Does that water just go out into the sewer?
Yeah, that's what you'd call a pump and dump, same thing.
That's what we built a few pump and dumps years ago when those systems first came out.
Yeah, so, but that's really, really cool. I've never heard of that product, but I would tell you that in my geotherm, in the heating mode, it isn't real efficient. People say it's the most efficient out there. I would disagree 100%, and I've been doing this for 45 years, so... The heating part is not as efficient. So 58 degrees is also heat when it's zero outside. So you're using that same coil to heat with, and all you have to do is bring that temperature up to, let's say, 99 to 110.
So from
discharge.
58 to 100 degree discharge temperature.
So you're only bringing it up 48 degrees or something like that to get a good discharge temperature. The way they do it in a geotherm is they use electric strip heaters. And, boy, you don't want those to run. They cost too much money. The way you're doing it with natural gas sounds like it could be a really nice product.
So his standard furnace would be the supplemental heat.
That's correct. So I think that you're really onto something, Mike. I've not heard of it. Funny you mention it, because we were talking about it over breakfast, Chuck and I. And I said that if I wanted to, I could make mine work the way yours is working. I just haven't gotten around to doing it yet. So, but I think it's a brilliant idea. I hope it works for you.
All right. That's great information.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you something. Did you use it over the wintertime? Summertime?
I do not have one. I'm just investigating getting one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you had one. No, it's a great... I think it sounds like a brilliant idea.
I know,
idea.
It's a great concept.
I just don't know what something like that might cost for an installation.
Well, a green guy like you, Pat, though, how about the pump and dump? Are you good with that?
I'm not crazy. there's a.
I mean,
no.
Pat carries signs in Save the Earth.
Yeah, right.
Rallies,
right. No, I'm not. I'm as a rule not normally crazy about pump and dump, but that's what he's talking about
right
now. So, what we use now, Mike, is we use a closed loop system and we use a glycol. Mine's 20 feet down in the ground. I got 1,600 feet of pipe running around with glycol in it. So when it comes into my furnace, it's 58 degrees all the time. But anyways. Yeah, so that's what you're going to do with your well. Your well water should be coming in about 58 degrees.
Yeah.
And so it's good heat and it's good cooling. Specifically cooling, that's where you're really going to save your money.
And his supplement comes from a natural gas furnace.
Yes.
Mike, do me a favor. Stay in touch with us via email. Maybe we'll talk a couple times.
All right, sounds good. One quick question, Pat. The Geotherm, is that a brand name?
No, Geotherm is a system. It would be like a forced air system. So what it is mine's made by
heat from the earth. Geotherm.
Yeah. So you Geotherm is just pulling cold water out of the ground, and much like you're talking in your system, and using it for heating and cooling. But the difference is on any geothermal furnace that I know of has a electric backup heat to it, which is really, really bad when it comes to energy. You know, if you're not making enough heat, the electric backup comes on. So yeah, I think what you're going to do, I think if you're looking at doing it, if it's not too expensive, I think guy's right on the money with it.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
Stay well,
have
Mike.
A good day.
Let's go right to Jim in Florida because he's curious about whether or not he should replace a heat exchanger on an existing unit, Pat. Jim, are you still with us?
I still am.
Is it raining in Florida? Has the hurricane dissipated?
I'm in Michigan. I am in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know where the. Yeah, I'm in Plymouth.
Oh, good morning, Jim.
That's probably my mistake.
That's where my okay. I have a house in Plymouth on Ann Arbor Road. So
I'm not too far, a few blocks away.
Yeah.
I have a 25-year-old Bryant high efficiency condensing gas furnace.
Yeah.
And I've had it serviced regularly. The last time the service tech was out, a few weeks ago, adjusted, cleaned it. He said, I'm probably going to get through this winter with no issues, but the end of this winter, I should seriously consider a new furnace due to the heat exchanger.
Mm. We used to pull out Bryant furnaces. Bryant's made by Carrier, in case you didn't know that. But Bryant, Carrier,
exactly.
Payne is all the same furnace, different sticker on it. And we'd pull them out
as soon as
5 years.
Yeah,
go ahead.
They've had a lot of issues. He said there is still some warranty remaining, and the warranty would cover the cost of the heat exchanger, but not the labor. It would just be the pump.
Yeah, here's what I would tell you for sure on that, Jim, is don't replace the heat exchanger. It's just not worth it. You've gotten plenty of use out of your furnace. Replace the furnace. A heat exchanger is like taking a 30-year-old car and putting a new motor in it. You got all sorts of other things that are going to go wrong with it. Get rid of it. Get yourself a new. And again, like I told one of the earlier people on the radio, I highly recommend a American-made product. Look into Johnson Controls furnaces. No, they're Mexico.
American-made?
Well, it used to be, but it isn't. Back in the day it was, but it isn't anymore. It's Mexico. So do your due diligence. Johnson Control makes Luxair, Rudd, makes several models. Get something from Johnson Control, which is in Kansas, or Daikin Products, which is a Amana, and they're down in Texas.
Texas,
yeah. All righty.
Okay, good.
Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Jim. So we've got just a minute before we take another break, Pat. Replacing a heat exchanger on a typical residential furnace, any idea what it would cost?
I would think probably around $1,500 to $2,000.
Why
would you do that?
Yeah, okay. Appreciate you answering that for me.
No problem.
A week or so ago, we talked to Bill Burkhart Jr. from Four Seasons Kanga Roofing, and he's just a tremendous interview. The time goes by too fast. We never have enough time with Bill. But if you're thinking of a roof replacement, or you just think maybe you've got another 5 to 6 years on your roof, but it needs good professional repair, then we suggest you call Four Seasons Kanga Roofing.
Find professional contractors you can trust at InsideOutsideGuys.com. Now, once again, here are Ken Calverley and Chuck Bridenstine.
Thanks, everybody. We appreciate you being with us. It's Chuck and Pat Kelly today. Actually, Ken's going to be with me in just a few minutes over at Atlas Home Improvement for an hour between 12 and 1 o'clock. Pat, gosh, we only got a few more minutes, and no one else on the phone, but you and I have hours of things to talk about, so we're just going to have to do it again, right, at some point?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I so appreciate you being here and helping our listeners like you do, and I'll probably get some people during the week that'll go, I wanted to talk to that guy, but I couldn't get through or couldn't get your phone.
You know, what they need to know is that we spoke for 2 hours before we came on the show about everything.
And it could have been 12. Yep. I know. When Pat and I are together, our biggest problem is remembering the next thing we want to talk to each other about. Sad to say. But the good news is we're here to do it, right?
Yep.
But if you have questions during the week, I can always get hold of Pat. And Pat, it graciously offers to help people on all this stuff, I think because you share the same passions we do.
Yep.
Yeah, you love
certainly
it.
Certainly do. Well, and I love people. People are, you know.
Good people.
Like, yeah, good people are really cool.
I agree with you 1,000%. Let me ask you, years ago, my background, of course, is home building and remodeling, small commercial. The whole geotherm thing was coming in, and we did one for a couple on a brand new home, and it was a pump and dump system I mentioned just a minute ago. And we thought, boy, this is it. This is what every house has got to have at some point. During the break, you were talking about the cost differentials that exist today if someone wanted to do a geotherm.
Yeah.
You want to share that discussion over the next couple of minutes?
Yeah, I was talking about new construction, right? So if you were building a new home, and let's just say that it was, and I'm using some roundabout numbers, but let's say that you were building a new home that was going to cost you $20,000 to put all new ducting and heating and cooling in your house. And it might cost you 27 or maybe even 28 to do a geotherm with all new ducting in your house. Well, you're saying, well, that's a little bit more money. You know, that's $7,000 or $8,000 more.
Almost however, 33%.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty quick. But just so you know, the government was going to give you 30% back. Now I think it's down to 26%. But the government gives you 30% back. Now you're about the same price to put in geotherm as you were to put in regular system.
But we don't get that money back, so that changes it, right?
Yeah, well, you get money back. It's all good.
I mean, still think it's a relative offset?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We'll have to talk more about that in the future. We've got Phil from Ohio on the line with another question, though, directed at Pat. Phil, are you with us?
Yeah, Chuck.
Good morning, Phil.
Hey, Pat. Hey, we just had a motor replaced in our duplex here. We rent, and I'm just wondering if that was one of those ECM motors, or if a motor goes out, can they just replace it with the other kind of motor?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, that is a great question, Phil. But the answer to that is no. You have to replace all the wiring in the furnace, a new card, because you got to go from AC to DC. So there's it can be retroed, but it's going to cost you a little bit of money.
So if they had an old regular motor, they could put that in.
Yeah, you can put in an ECM motor. Yep, you can do it legally. But let's just talk real quick round numbers. Let's say that you were going to spend $250, or let's say it's probably more like $350 nowadays, to put in a new motor. If you were going to put in an ECM motor with a new board, that might cost you $725 or something like that. But what I would say about that, Phil, is that that should have been asked. You know, when they come to replace it, now you know what you know. If it ever happens again, you can say, hey, can you replace that with an ECM motor? What's the difference? Then you have to look at what's the payback.
Can you tell looking at it what he got, Pat? He's a renter, so maybe the landlord was in charge of the replacement.
No.
Can he go look at it and tell or no?
Yeah, I could, but I'm not. Yeah, no. The ECM motor will have probably four white wires coming from the motor. You can look at that, and if it's, but my guess is that nobody would just retro out to a ECM motor unless there was some huge benefit to
You're
it.
You're thinking they put a similar motor into the PSC one they tore out.
Yeah, that's probably what they put in. So, Phil, yeah, kind of bad news with that. But you know, going forward, if you ever have to replace a motor again, I would ask what's the difference and what's the savings on it. Okay.
Yeah, we. It just of course the motor on it crapped out when you know it was 100 degrees here, and you know everybody
of course
scrambling, you know, to get a HVAC guy to come over and. Our landlord here, she's a great lady, and she knows a lot of people. Yeah, I was
just glad to hear that.
Yeah, I was just wondering if so they would have to change out the card on the motor or on
the control board.
The control board has
to be changed. Yep, the motor and the control board have to be set up for ECM, Phil. But again, I'm glad that you now recognize that. And if it ever happens in the future, maybe you can ask again. But I want to say something to you real quick about getting an HVAC guy and how things crap out in the worst weather. The reason they crap out, especially rooftops and industrial, they crap out when it's 95 degrees or it's below zero. And us guys got to get up on them roofs and fix them in blistering cold or in blistering heat. And the reason for it is they're trying to work as hard as they can at that time. So when you're below zero outside and you're trying to get heat, get fans running just as hard as it can, trying to keep you satisfied, that's why they go out. So, that's the hardest time that they work.
It's like having an engine run at full blast continually,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. So, but anyways, you should still be good now for another 8 years or so before you have motor issues with that. All right.
Does that help you, Phil?
Yeah. Thanks a bunch. I appreciate your help.
All right, Phil. Have
Glad
a good day.
It was a great question. So legally, can I replace that old standard motor with a very similar motor? I don't have to replace it with an ECM if I do replace it.
Yeah, you just replace it with a PSC motor. No problem. You can go with the ECM motor. Retro it out. But my question would be, why would you?
I agree with you.
You know, because at some point, even if it's 10 years old, you got a 10-year-old furnace that you're putting a new ECM motor in.
Yeah.
And it's just, and by the time you're done, it's $750. And let's say that you can buy a new one for $3,000. I'm not sure why I would do that.
Yeah.
I would just spend the $3,000 get a new furnace.
And you gave some of that advice earlier, and I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah, man, we talked our way through 2 hours. Will you come back, Mr. Kelly, at some point? Here?
Anytime, buddy. It was a real pleasure to see you.
It was a real pleasure to listen to you talk to our listeners. I got 2 pages of notes here. Want to remind everybody to stick around for the next hour. Ken and I are going to be with Atlas Home Improvement and Darian and Bobby. Hopefully Phil will show up there, too, while we're talking. And, of course, during the week, InsideOutsideGuys.com. Check out Inside Outside Guys Facebook. Because from the roof to the basement, the street to the back fence, the Inside Outside Guys are here for you 24/7. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you, Danielle.
Goodbye. Guys.